On July 20th, 1969, was one of the major technological advances of all mankind, is when man went onto the moon. As Neil Armstrong famously said, it was one small step for a man, one major step for mankind. And in fact, the Jewish fascination and the preoccupation with the moon was well before NASA's preoccupation. Because they go back into 1969 where they finally got to the moon. Judaism's fascination goes way back to the time of the Torah. The Torah tells us the mitzvah, in fact, it was the first mitzvah given to the Jewish people. Hachosh Ezelechem Rosh Chadoshim. That the mitzvah of following, of setting up and following a lunar calendar. In fact, there's the famous Rashi in the beginning of Sefer Bereishis. Rashi asked, why does the Torah begin with Bereishis? Why does the Torah begin with Genesis? Since the whole purpose of the Torah is to do mitzvahs, so let's go right to the crux of it. Let's go and discuss mitzvahs. So Rashi answers, you're right, but first, God koach ma'isav higi li'amo. God first wanted to teach us the potential of man, because you could have the best gift in the world. You could have, if you have a diamond, but you think it's glass, you're never going to see its value. You could have the best gift in the world, but if you don't see your potential, it's not going to mean anything. So you have to learn through Sefer Bereishis. See how great one could become. You become like an Avram Avinu, a Yitzchak, a Yaakov. Conversely, you could become like an Esav, a Yishmael. You could be an Anshe Sodom and Amora, etc. So we go through, learn Bereishis, we see all the potential. So the Torah says, once you know your potential, now I'm ready for the first mitzvah. This is the first mitzvah given to the Jewish people. There are many mitzvahs given in Genesis and Bereishis before, but that was to individuals like Avram, Yitzhak, and Yaakov. This is the first public mitzvah given to the Jewish people, and it was the mitzvah of sanctifying the moon. In fact, the pasuk says, "Achosh hazeh lachem," the word zeb, pointing. The Medrash says, God pointed to Moshe and said, this is when it is. When the moon looks like this, this is when it's Rosh Chodesh. And that's why some have a custom, Vizos HaTorah, they point at the Torah when it's up, because Zeh is always a language of pointing at, of saying this is what it is. So the Torah tells us long before NASA's fascination, we're concerned with the lunar, with the Kiddush HaChodesh, with the lunar calendar. And in fact, it's interesting why, because it'd be a lot simpler to follow the solar calendar, like the way we have it, because all the seasons are set, it's all worked out. The lunar calendar is a lot more, if you just follow the lunar calendar, it wouldn't make a difference. But since we follow a lunar calendar, but we have a solar correction, we're true to the seasons also. So for instance, let's say the Muslims, the Arabs, they only follow the lunar calendar, so they have no seasons. In other words, Ramadan could fall out in summer, spring, winter, fall. And it does, because there's no seasons. But Passover must be in the spring. Sukkot must be in the fall. So what we do approximately three times every 7 years, so a lunar calendar is 354 days. And a regular calendar, solar calendar, 365. If you have a solar calendar leap year, that's 366. One day they have February 29th. But a Jewish leap year, you add a whole month, 29 days. You have 383 days. So about approximately three times every 7 years, we go ahead and we make a leap year. That's why this year is a leap year. That's why Pesach will be a little later at the end of April. And all the other holidays, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, won't be to the end of September. And Hanukkah won't be. And you have about a 3 to 4 week leeway. As it gets too close, we have another leap year. It's already set up. We don't have to worry about it. The rabbis a long time ago set up the calendar, so it's fixed now, so we know when it is, but it's already set up. It's a very complex counting, figuring it out, trying to get the lunar and the leap years. It would have been a lot simpler just to go with the solar calendar. So why is the Torah insist on us following the lunar calendar? The mitzvah of Kiddush HaChodesh, HaChodesh Elohim Rosh Chodesh, and following the lunar. Why does Judaism insist on following the lunar? So we all know that in basically the difference between, many differences, but the difference between the sun and the moon is, we know, everyone knows, sunrise, sunset. It's easier to find the sun. But the moon is a lot harder to find. You look up in the sky, half the month it's not visible. The other half, we don't know, well, where am I going? Should I look? I'm looking up over, oh, when you're going out to do Kiddush Ravana, you don't even know where the moon is. You got to go look all around for it. So what does the moon represent and what does the sun represent? So the sun represents stability. We all know everyone needs a roof on their head, they need food on the table. But if it's all you do is have a roof on your head, food on the table, and everything else is rote, life's going to be boring. However, what the moon represents, creativity, change. That, so we know to be on a road trip your whole life, taking a camping trip, that's not such a good idea either, because, you know, going on a trip your whole life, you need some stability. So what we do is we combine the solar and lunar calendar, and we combine the sun, which tells us we need stability, because then you get bored of life. So you need the moon for your creativity to change yourself. And that's why we combine both the lunar and the solar calendar. And that's Judaism in general, that we try to makadesh the chol, that we take the physical, the mundane, and we use it for spiritual purposes. As they point out, we know there's a famous Medrash Tanchuma. The Medrash Tanchuma, when Noah comes out of the ark, so he plants a vineyard, or he wants to plant a vineyard, and the angel comes down to him and says, let's make a pact. And what did they slaughter? Four animals. What are the four animals? A lamb, lion, monkey, and pig. Why was Noah and the angel slaughtering four animals? The lamb, lion, monkey, and pig. Because when a person drinks a little more than they should, so you become sleepy as a lamb. You drink a little more to the excess, you become as fearless as a lion. You drink a little more, you start jumping around like a monkey, and you drink totally to the excess, you start acting like a pig, cursing, vomiting, etc. So our rabbis were well aware of the dangers of wine. Yet every Friday night, every yontif, every simcha, we make a blessing over a cup of wine. Because that's what Judaism is all about, is the holy and the not yet holy. That we take the wine and we use it. Someone who's just drinking, someone who's depressed and drinks, that's going to lead to helpless abandon. But someone who drinks, that the wine, he should use it, it's a means in order to get to an element of joy, and everything in moderation, that's fine. Because we all know we have a guf and a neshama, a body and a soul, and we have to keep them both happy. If you ignore the body's needs, you'll become very frustrated. And if you ignore your spiritual needs, you're not going to have a meaningful life. You're going to be unhappy. You always have to combine both the physical and the spiritual. And in fact, that's why I think it was Uri Zohar who was, I think he was a Baal Tshuva. He wasn't an observant for many years. And now he became a rabbi. I think he wrote a couple of books. I think he goes to different discos, jails, and he tries to get people come back. So in one of his many books, he has a chapter. He talks about, he always wondered, when he was non-observant, when he wasn't religious, he used to hate religious Jews. This is what he's saying. And he never, you know, and now that he became religious, he's been thinking about it, like, why in the world, like, You hate a lot of people, but it was something extra. I just couldn't stand those Haredim, those religious Jews. Like, and I never, you know, I couldn't feel, you know, when I hated them, I really didn't care. But now that I am one of them, or I am a religious Jew, I was wondering, what was that all about? And he said, you know what it was? Because, so let's say when you're a secular Jew or a secular person, so then, okay, so you know the score, I'm involved in the secular world, I don't believe in that religious stuff. Good, you say you get Olam Haba, okay, you're going to get rewarded in the world to come, I don't believe in that stuff. You could dream all you want, that's fine, and doesn't bother me. If you're doing things for the next world, that doesn't bother me. But you know what? But in Judy, but he saw the Orthodox Jews and saying he saw they're enjoying this world also. And that he couldn't stand. These same people think they're going to be getting rewarded. They're having these nice Friday night Shabbos meals, a nice cholent Shabbos lunch. They have nice weddings. They always seem to be happy and enjoying the physical parts of the world as well. And they also think they're getting the next world. So that's what bothered them about it, they're getting both. Because I knew I wasn't getting that, but I thought they had exclusivity for this world. So either way, that's what we see, that we have a guf and a neshama, body and a soul, and we have to combine both of them. And that's why we combine the lunar calendar with the solar correction a couple of times about every 7 years, is because the sun represents stability. We need to be able to have a roof on our head, food on the table, have the basics. But that by itself, life will become boring, we're not going to be happy. And therefore you need the creativity of the moon waxing larger and smaller, and therefore you can enjoy you enjoy life as well. That's why we combine both the lunar and the solar. So among the messages that we pointed out is, besides that, so the commentators, the Mefarshim, say the moon is really a metaphor for Jews in general, Jewish history. That we know Jewish history, it's the stories of ups and downs. That basically we're leaving the Exodus from Egypt, we got the Torah in Har Sinai, we went into the land of Israel, and then we know we got thrown out of Israel, back, thrown out. We had temples, we've had pogroms, holocausts, etc. We've seen both ends of the scale. And that's what the moon represents, waxing bigger and smaller. It's so you could barely see it at certain times, and other times it shines brightly. And it's a lesson in Jewish history that no matter how dim it seems and how there's no hope left, but if you wait long enough, the light will come out. And it's like eventually the moon comes out and shines at night, so too the Jewish nation will shine. As Mark Twain used to say, the biggest proof for a God is the Jewish people, that they're still around. That many nations have come and gone, but the Jews are the only ones who stick around. It reminds me of the Gemara. The Gemara discusses two rabbis talking about the Medrash, the parable is always the 70 nations of the world are referred to the 70 wolves, and the Jewish people is referred to as the lamb. So one rabbi said, how great is that lamb that it survived 70 wolves? And the other rabbi said, no, you got it all wrong. It's kama gado haroe. It's not how great is the sheep, how great is the shepherd. It's the one who maneuvered the sheep. How do you think the sheep survived 70 wolves? It's only with a divine intervention. It was God pulling the strings behind the scenes. And that's what it's all about. So the moon is a metaphor for Jewish history. And it's built into our mission, the Jewish mission, to never give up on a personal level, also never give up hope. No matter how dim it is, there's always light's going to shine. That's why we specifically have the mitzvah of Achoz Lechem Rosh Chodeshim, the mitzvah is to follow the lunar calendar, because that's built into our mission. That's how the Jews are going to be. They'll be rising, falling, but ultimately at the end, we will, you know, come out successful. Another explanation given on why we picked the lunar calendar is because we know there's another fundamental difference between the sun and moon. Besides the fact The sun we know, sunrise, sunset, we know where to find it. The moon is waxing bigger and smaller all over. But we point out that the moon doesn't create its own light, but it's a reflection of the sun. And many people make a mistake. They think true greatness is only if you create something yesh me'ayin. You made this idea. It's all yours. You made it up new. But if you didn't create it new, then oh, what's the big deal? And we see that's not true. In fact, it's one of all these great poets. So someone once asked, I think it was Pascal, the 13th century French mathematician, what's so great about these poets? The words are already there. They're just taking words that are there and they're putting it together. But the point being, that is a great thing. If you take, you don't have to create words, you take pre-existing words and put things in, create a unit, that's also tremendous. You have an orchestra, everyone playing together, that makes a big difference. The KISS principle, keep it simple, stupid. You have a lot of very intelligent and academics, but if they can't convey the message over to real people, you know, not that the knowledge is not worthless, they know it and it's good, but in terms of transmitting it, they're not going to be successful. So the point being is, the moon is transmitting, the goal of a Jew is to transmit. We don't have to make, you know, if you come up with a new chiddush, that's great, but it's not necessary. Our job is to take the lessons from the previous generation, from the Mesorah, from all of the rabbis, from the Chumash, the Talmud, and take that and apply it to our society, our generation. We don't have to make up new things. Just take the pre-existing principles and apply them, and that will shine light on it. That's what the moon represents. It doesn't have its own light, but it's a reflection of the sun. And that's why we use the moon, to teach us the important lesson of the tradition of learning from the previous generation. And as well as another lesson they learn out is, in the beginning of Parshas Bereishis, in Genesis, it talks about the sun and the moon, and it calls them the great luminaries, the Maoros HaGadolim. And the same Pasuk, it also refers to the stars, but no mention about luminaries for the stars. It mentions by the sun and the moon, but no mention by the stars. And the question is, as we know, many of the stars are much larger than the moon. So why is the moon called the great luminary, while the star, which is much bigger, is only known as a star, not a luminary? So the Evan Ezra explains, so clearly we're not talking about size and strength. We know the stars are much bigger, but we're talking in terms of benefit to human beings, benefit to the earth. It's true the star is much bigger, but it's so far away, the benefit to us is minimal. It's almost no benefit, very little benefit. But the moon, which is much smaller, but at night in the darkness, when it shines its bright light, it gives us a tremendous benefit on earth. And the lesson is obvious. That's not how big you are, how intelligent, how strong. It's what you do. God gave us all tremendous assets and qualities. It's no just to have them and no one to benefit, it defeats the whole purpose. The purpose of those qualities is to give it over. So what's the message the Torah is telling us? So why is the moon called a luminary and not the star? So how do you go from a star to a luminary? That you shed light on a place where there is previously darkness. If you could bring light onto a place, then you deserve the status of a great luminary. It's not how great you are objectively, it's how much you help people. And that's why, you know, a person could be the biggest millionaire in the world, billionaire, but if you're never helping out, you're not giving charity, you might be benefiting, but in the big picture, the world is, and you're not helping other people. And in general, you know, that's what Chesed's all about. But we know that the acts of loving kindness is going ahead and doing for others. We find many times the Torah talks about the acts of Chesed, or the mitzvah of tzedakah. In fact, the Gemara tells us in Sukkah that chesed is even more expansive than tzedakah. Because tzedakah can only be given with money. Chesed can be done with money as well as bodily exertion. Tzedakah can only be given to the poor. Chesed can be done to the rich and the poor. Tzedakah only to the living. Chesed to the living and the dead. In fact, that's the ultimate chesed we know. A chesed shel emes. As we read in Parshas Vayechi, when Yaakov made Yosef promise me, make sure you don't leave me in Mitzrayim. Get me out of here. Take me into Eretz Yisrael. So over there, Rashi quotes, you know, the ultimate mitzvah of Kfura is chesed shel emes, because when we do chesed, so maybe in the back of our minds, we think, okay, that person owes me one. Not that you're actually thinking about, maybe you are. In fact, that's why there's a saying in America, you know, when let's say you do a favor for someone and you say thank you, they say don't mention it. What do you mean don't mention it? Meaning subconsciously, don't think we're even now. I did you a big favor, you still owe me. Don't give me this thank you. Doesn't cut it here. So, or this famous Maisa with Rav Henkin, they say over in Europe, where it used to be where they used to have telegrams, maybe they had it here also, you used to have to pay, you got like a certain amount of words, 25 words for whatever the amount of money was. So someone came to him and said, I have a problem, I have 26 words, and I'm not sure which word to leave out. Either should I leave out please, like I wrote in the beginning, or should I take out thank you? I'm sure you're all thinking thank you is two words, not one. But if you know Yiddish, which I don't, if you know Yiddish, it's only one word, like gedanks or something like that. So the question was, which word do you leave out, please or thank you? And Rav Henkin said it's a no-brainer. Saying please is a nice thing, and you speak nicely, derech eretz, it's a nice way of speaking. But saying thank you, that's a biblical obligation. Hakaras hatov, appreciating the good. He's saying that's, some people say thank you and they don't mean it. They're saying thank you because they don't really appreciate what you did, but they're saying thank you, they know they're supposed to say, but saying thank you isn't just saying it, it's feeling the thank you. I think there's a mice, I think it was Rav Chaim Shmuel Levitz, I'm not sure, one of the great rabbis. So one of the boys, I guess, needed money, so the rabbi lent him some money. So after he gave him some money, the boy said, thank you. So the rabbi said, look, it's nice you said thank you, but you're not allowed to say thank you. Because I'm not getting into practically halacha, but there's an issue of you can't take interest. So perhaps him saying thank you, he's getting something extra. But that's just so he told him, don't say thank you. Okay. And let's say, so you paid him back, whatever. And then it happened again, he needed money. So he took a loan, and that was it. And he didn't say anything. So Rav Chaim Shmuel Levitz, or whoever it was, said to him, how come you didn't say thank you to me? Because last time you told me I shouldn't say it. He said, yeah, no, I didn't say you should say it, but you should feel that you owe me a thank you. I see that you didn't feel that. It's the Jewish hakara isn't just saying the thank you, no. It could be by saying thank you, hopefully maybe you'll feel it inside. But it's feeling it. It's not enough just to say it. You have to actually feel the appreciation of what a person's doing. And that's why we find it goes so far in Judaism that it doesn't even stop by people. It even involves inanimate objects. As we know, as we see by Moshe Rabbeinu, didn't want to perform the first couple of makas, the water. He didn't want to turn the Nile into blood. Why? Because the Nile saved his life. They put his, when he was a baby, they put him in the Nile River, and the Nile River, he floated in the basin. You ask, like, what do you mean he floated? That's what the job is. Like, people think, well, why should I thank the person? I'm paying him. I paid the guy, and he wants me to thank him also? No, there's an element of hakaras hatov also. The point being is, if a person helps you, so even if they're doing their job, you still should feel a level of hakaras hatov. So that's what Moshe Rabbeinu didn't want him to do. He felt it. That's why he got Aaron to do the first couple of them. And that's why as well, as we know every Friday night, every time we make Kiddush, we cover up the challah. Why do we cover up the challah during Kiddush? So maybe we'll get into that over Shabbos about the issue of Lecha Mishnah covering it, but it's the long outlines here. One of the famous reasons given, why do you cover the challah during Kiddush? Because the lecha is all week long. Let's say I'm having challah and wine. What bracha do I make first? What do I eat first? Do I eat the challah first or I eat the wine?
Wine.
Right, so all week long, the challah. So if I was eating at my meal tonight, challah and wine, I make my hamotzi lechem in ha'aretz. It's true, even though hamotzi covers most of the blessings, it does not cover wine. So if you're having wine during a meal, even if you washed and made hamotzi, you still have to make a bo'er pri ha'gafen on the wine. We just think that because we're used to Friday night where we make kiddush, we already made the bo'er pri ha'gafen, and you should have in mind you're going to be drinking wine. That's why we don't make another bo'er pri ha'gafen. But hamotzi does not cover the bo'er pri ha'gafen. So if you're having a meal during the week, first you have the bread, because bread is more chashev, and then you have the wine. So we see that bread is usually a number one. So therefore, on Friday night, since we have an obligation to make kiddush, and we need to make the blessing on wine first, so we have to make the bo'er pri ha'gafen. So to speak, not to embarrass the challah, he's usually being on top. He likes being the king, so we cover up the challah, or the old meaning was not even to bring out challah. Either the challah wasn't even around until afterwards. Whatever the meaning is, you don't bring it out, whether you bring it out after, or you cover it up, the point being is not to embarrass the challah, even not to embarrass the challah. The challah has no feelings. And in fact, the many people who are busy screaming at one spouse and about not covering the challah, and meanwhile they're screaming at the person embarrassing them in front of all the guests. So obviously they don't know why they're covering the challah, obviously. The point is you cover the challah to learn how you should treat humans. We don't really care about the challah. The challah has no feelings. But we train ourselves that if we're even sensitive to covering up the challah, how much more so when it comes to people. And that's the lesson of Akaras HaTov, even on inanimate objects. And that's why, in fact, it's interesting that we know we have a principle of shlichus, like that we appoint a messenger, shluchos adam kamoso. And that's why, in fact, we have something called the shliach sibor, the one who leads davening, runs the services. He's our shliach, he's the messenger of the congregation. So it's interesting, he's our shliach. And therefore, when we read the Shemona Esrei over a second time, the Chazores Hashatz, so we have him read and we just listen. However, it's interesting to note that there's one blessing that we don't rely on a shliach, a messenger. We do it ourselves. Which bracha is that? Right, but in the Shemona Esrei. When the Chazan's repeating Shemona Esrei, we just listen. But there's one part of the Shemona Esrei where we tune in when it gets to that point. What point is that? Correct. Modim anachnu lach. So then there's a modim derabbanan, we say. And why is modim singled out, discriminated against, or maybe given better treatment? Because modim, what is modim? Modim anach, God. Thank you. I'm just saying thanks to God. So the rabbis are teaching us a tremendous lesson. When you're saying thank you do it yourself. You don't send a messenger to thank someone for someone else. It lacks hakaras hatov. You can have a shliach sibor when it comes to saying thank you, that you do directly. And that's the lesson we learn from inanimate objects, certainly on people. That's the element of chesed, that the stars might be very big, but if they don't really give any benefit to anyone, they're not worth much. They remain a star, not a luminary. But someone who's not, they don't have to be the greatest. You're the average person. But you go ahead and do chesed. You're helping people. You're bringing life. You're bringing light to people's lives. That's how your person turns a star into a luminary, by bringing darkness. And that would be one major leap to mankind, the ability to help, to help others in the time of need.